What would we see? What would we know? What could we experience if we opened our eyes and had the guts and the courage and the strength and the vulnerability and the humility to just look beyond anything that has defined us? That's the challenge of the day. But first, a little story. A young guy was looking for a new job, and he went to one of the big corporations and got an interview. He was so excited to get an interview, and he walked into the corporate office, and he sat across the desk, and the interviewer said, "You know, we're looking for somebody who's really, really very responsible." And the guy said, "Well, then I'm your guy, because at my last job, anytime anything ever went wrong, they always said I was responsible. Last week, we talked about owning our lives, and we had good kicking the balls all around and yarn going everywhere. We're going to maybe get a little more serious today, but so breathe with me. We worked with taking responsibility for our choices, for reclaiming our power that we had given away, and for refusing to outsource our lives to any judgment, to any opinion, to any circumstance, to old religious ideas, or the endless voices telling us who we should be." Anybody got endless voices in your life telling you this is who you're supposed to be? Most of them exist between your ears. But the reality is that's a dangerous world to live in. Today is part two, and I'm going to go a little deeper in the well with that same idea. Because doesn't owning your life sound like a great bumper sticker? Yeah, it's a good bumper sticker. It's really cool on a church marquee. Own your life, and it feels so good. But what do you do when Monday morning comes? You've seen the marquee, you've kicked the ball around, and the yarn is going everywhere, and you're smiling and laughing, and then Monday morning comes, and the life that you're supposed to own is complicated, is convoluted, and doesn't match the vision of what's going on here. It doesn't match. What happens, anybody, when you keep repeating the same patterns that you said you're going to give up, you're going to get rid of, and then the same situations keep happening over and over and over again? It feels good on Sunday, but then Monday morning, nothing in the life that you're living looks like the life that you're trying to own and you're trying to create. It happens. Anybody ever been there? I've been there. You know, eventually, we're going to go a little deeper now. Eventually, we have to, on a spiritual path, if we're on a path of becoming and growing and stretching, we have to move our spirituality from the visionary experience, the visionary expectation, which looks a lot like hope and wishing and desire with not a lot of action. We have to get to the more challenging spiritual questions that say, what am I going to do with the hand that's been dealt to me? We're living in the hope over here and the vision. Yes, it's going to come. It's going to come. Something's coming any day. When is it coming? And we have to go, but this is not the hand that I was dealt. This is the hand that I was dealt. What do I do with it? Who am I going to be in the midst of this hand? How am I going to play these cards? Now, I just go back over here. Eventually, we have to take responsibility with the hand that is in front of us. Now, I want to get real clear, because I can already hear it coming, the yeah buts. The yeah buts. You know, you think I can't hear them, but I can see them on your face. You know, and we talked a lot about challenging people to own their life can often not feel loving. Doesn't feel loving. But perhaps the most loving thing to do is to challenge somebody to be more of themselves. So let me get one thing straight first. Ownership is not blame. Ownership is not blame. So hopefully that answers a few of the yeah buts. Yes, things happen to you that you didn't choose. Anybody have that? I didn't choose this, but it's happening in my life. People make decisions that negatively impact your life. How dare they? It happens. And sometimes new thought spirituality can dance very close to the edge of cruelty when we do what we call malpractice, metaphysicalizing, and say, well, gosh, own your life. How did you create that? How did you manifest that experience in your life? Trying to make you completely responsible for the hand that you have been dealt. We don't do that here. There's a huge difference, and I want to draw this distinction today, between causation and participation. When I talk about ownership, I'm not talking about causation. How did you create this mess? I'm talking about participation, your power and your ability to say and to know, I don't have to participate in the same story. I don't have to participate in the experience, or because I am a powerful being, been given choice, I can participate with this. I can be involved in that, but all the power lies in your decision, and that's the reminder we're talking about when it comes to ownership. But be real clear, causation and participation are very different. Blame will always say, whose fault is this? Who is responsible? Who's the matter with us? Ownership says, how can we heal it? How can we transform it? How can we make it better? And I refuse to put up a tent here. You know, they say when you're going through hell, don't put up a tent. But that's exactly what happens when we go, who's responsible? Let me find the person that this landed on my doorstep. Ownership and responsibility says, how can we transform it? Perhaps the most powerful statement that we can make on a spiritual path is, I didn't choose what happened, but I'm choosing who I become because of it. I did not choose what happened, but I am choosing who I am becoming because of it. I am choosing who I am in the midst of it. My good friend, Faith Moran, God rest her soul. Turn me down just a little bit, Sebastian. I feel like I'm about to get louder and this mic's going to blow people away. My friend, Faith Moran, God rest her soul. She taught me this, and she was given a diagnosis. Diagnosis that nobody wants, but that her brain was basically going to be dying before her body died. And she stood up on that Sunday and she said, this is the whale that's washed up on my beach. And I have a choice in this moment. I can say, why me? Why is this happening to me? Who's responsible? What God is responsible? What energy is responsible? And she lived it out loud week after week as we saw her begin to fade and ministry eventually stopped. But she never stopped saying, who am I with the whale that's washed up on my beach? Not why me? You know, we have things that happen in this earthly existence, difficult things, challenges that come, hopefully not as major as what Faith went through. Do we have the capacity in those moments to do something about the whale that's washed up on the beach? Or do we mindlessly, over and over and over again, complain and poke, why is the whale here? We poke it, we prod it, we look for somebody responsible, we argue about who's responsible for the whale on your beach, and meanwhile, the whale is dying. And she said, I choose to ask the questions that make a better experience, and she lived in heaven as she said goodbye to her congregation. Who am I called to be in the midst of this? That's ownership with compassion. Who am I going to be with what hand has been dealt to me? That's the ownership we're talking about. She did not participate with the victimhood it could have been. She did not participate with the poor me that could have been in that environment, and she ministered in her last year of life more than she ever did in the 30 years before that. Something beautiful happened, and I carry her with me to this day because she invited me into getting the whale back into the water. She invited a whole congregation of people. She created community and said, let's spend our time getting the whale back into the water as opposed to poking it. That's step one. Step one is find the compassion, surround yourself with people who are willing to help you move through it and to raise the vibration around it. Step two starts to meddle perhaps a little bit more, but it's where the work was done and it's where Faith did the work. We ask, who or what is running my life? Say that with me. Who or what is running your life? Let's make it personal and put my in there. Who or what is running my life? You know, we like to think that we're making conscious decisions all the time. Yes, I'm fully conscious, but sometimes it's the inner 12-year-old making those decisions. I got an inner 10-year-old and an inner 17-year-old that makes a lot of decisions when I go unconscious. No, I made a conscious affirmation and decision. It's the 10-year-old that made the decision. Sometimes it looks like fear. That which is underneath the surface of consciousness, the subconscious, the unconscious, looks like fear. Looks like the need to be liked. Anybody have that one? The need to be right. Sometimes it's the voices that belong to our parents. Anybody carry your parent? Not anymore. We're of a certain age. We got rid of them 2 years ago. Sometimes it's religious authority. Sometimes it's what you were taught and told about God, about yourself, about divinity, about prophets and teachers. Sometimes it's just plain shame and scarcity that's running things. And you're making decisions, knee-jerk responses to life that aren't authentically you. So we think we're making conscious choices, but many times it's the voice of a 30-year-old experience that somehow when you went unconscious, that snuck beneath the surface of the conscious mind and put down roots, and it became a belief. Who or what is running your life? Who or what is running your decisions? Who or what is running your reactions? Am I the only one? I'm going to put my guts on the table today. I hope that I'm not alone in doing that. It becomes a belief, and we wonder, why is the same thing happening to me over and over and over again? This is work that we've done here at Unity North. Collectively, you see, it's not just an individual work, it's collective. Why are we having the same challenges? Why are we having the same experiences in our community? We might want to look at that. And I honor today our board of directors that actually does that deep inner work. Here we are again with this challenge. Let's take a look at what's beneath the surface. In the Bible class this week, we spent some time talking about Jesus' 40 days in the wilderness. You know, he was baptized. It was a holy moment. Yes, there is my child in whom I am well pleased. And then immediately he gets the guidance, go to the wilderness. And we likened that wilderness to the dark night of the soul. Anybody ever been there? Wait a minute, you think I need to go to the party? I've just had the enlightened idea. I just heard the truth. I just was baptized in the name of the light that I am. And the guidance says, then go to the wilderness for 40 days, which is as long as it takes to clean house. As long as it takes to get rid of everything that is unlike the light that you are. Your dark night of your soul doesn't have to be punishment. It doesn't have to be test, and it wasn't for Jesus. It does not have to be punishment or test or challenge, but the dark night of your soul is a place of transformation. As you recognize that you, Joel Green, are more than Joel Green, the man, the personality, the ad executive. There's more to you. We have to go through these things. We choose to go through these things consciously in such a way that there is more of us on the other side. Anybody ever curse when bad things happen? You lie. We always do. We curse it, and we fight it, and we combat it. I'm saying lean into it. Lean into the whale that's there, and surround yourself with community that help you get back into the water. Help the situation get back into the water. Ownership requires honesty with ourselves. Don't you hate that? Ownership requires transparency, humility, and being willing to lean into the 40 days in the wilderness to transform ourselves. Carl Jung knew this. Carl Jung, did we have a quote there? I don't know if I gave you a quote. Yep, let's say it together. Until you make the unconscious conscious, it will direct your life, and you will call it fate. Oh, this is the hand that I've been dealt. Well, wait a minute, let's get responsible and go, there might be something that has been the undercurrent that has brought the whale before me. There might be something I can look at, and who's the only person that can answer that question? You. Not me. That's meddling. But you might want to look at it. That's worth sitting with for just a few moments. That's a spiritual ideal for evolution, for becoming. It's scary. But our willingness to sit with it without rushing to judgment, there's no judgment about it, it is what it is part of owning our life. And when we do that, well, and I'm going to start giving my guts on the table, we begin to see that what we've been calling circumstances is actually unconscious habit. Breathe. Maybe the excuse of, it's just the way I am, and I've heard that a lot. Just the way I am is actually a survival strategy that we learned a long time ago. And it worked until it didn't. And the universe says, there's more. There's more. I've been trying to get your attention. There's more. And we don't pay attention, and suddenly there's a whale on our beach. You see, before we can change what we are doing in life, creating the life that we're hoping and owning and envisioning, we have to ask, what part of me is driving my life? And that's why our meditation chant matters so much this week. I am more. I am more than this thought. I am more than this judgment. I am more than this reaction. I am more than this experience. As God's love, as God's light, I am more. Say that with me. As God's light, I am more. More than what? More than your history, more than your opinions, more than your beliefs, more than your experiences, more than your judgments, more than your mistakes, more than your titles, more than your accomplishments, more than your body. Anybody use your body as an excuse? Oh, it's just the DNA I got. That's an excuse. More than your body, more than your age. Some of the most young people I know are over 80 years old sitting in this room here today, because they don't let their body or their age define them. More than your beliefs, your education, and more than anything that's ever happened to you. More than any whale that's ever washed up on your beach. Breathe with me. These things, all those things I talked about, they may be your experience. We're not denying it. We don't do that here. But they don't define your essence. Every Sunday we come together, it's about reminding you of who you truly are. And sometimes that doesn't feel loving. You're challenging me to be more of myself. Yes, I am. And I will not let up, because somebody did it for me, and now I have heaven on earth. Now I am living more magnificently, abundantly, and full of love than I ever did before somebody had the guts to say, let's dig a little deeper in the well, boys. Let's dig a little deeper in the subconscious mind and bring it up. The second step in owning our lives is a refusal to accept any identity that never was truly yours. The second step is the refusal to accept any identity that you did at one point that was never truly yours. Anybody have that experience? Yeah, it's the whole thing. I'll think about it and I'll get back to you next Sunday. Jesus, our master teacher, saw beneath the surface of people. And he saw beneath the surface of himself, which is why he went into the 40 days of the wilderness, let me clean house. Ours is to do the very same and to follow his example. I can sing, I am more on Sunday, and then Monday comes and somebody pushes my button. And I realize that I gave my Christ consciousness the day off. It's a 24/7, 365 experience of being Christ consciousness. And it's not about beating yourself up when you realize it, but guess what? The Christ consciousness is one call away. It's Monday, it's at 10 o'clock, and I've already lost it. Let me bring the Christ consciousness back to behold that which is beneath the surface, the good, the light. Ownership isn't measured by what we wish and what we desire. You're going to have to go someplace else if you're going to be okay with wishes and hopes and desires and prayers without feet. It's revealed by what we practice over and over and over again. Fall down, get back up. Fall down, get back up. This time you're not down as long. This time it's another 2 hours before you fall. You know, I can say, we can say, we can talk a good game, bumper stickers and marquees. I believe we are one. But what happens when I meet somebody I just can't stand? Somebody, just, you know, you're thinking of somebody right now. I hope to God it's not me. I can say, I forgive, because that's what we do on Sunday morning. But what happens inside my body when somebody mentions the name of he who shall not be mentioned? You know who they are. There are people, I'll be honest, that are not safe to walk down the streets of my mind. I've got work to do. I've got cleanup work to do. I need to go to the wilderness and spend time in the wilderness and go, that which is out of congruity, it's time to banish them from the abode of my mind and consciousness. That's when spirituality moves from theology to embodiment. Own your life. And that's the most loving thing that anybody can do for you. Move your pretty theory and theology from here and put it into the realm of embodiment. I see you, I know you, I believe in you, and I will not let you play small, and I invite you into doing the same for me. And that can be a very tough place to be. Idea becomes implementation. Idea becomes action. Because our nervous system, now we're digging even deeper into the subconscious mind, our nervous system is disagreeing with our theology. Anybody ever find that? You have a visceral reaction to what you just affirmed? Pay attention to it. It's telling you something. Theology says everything's going to be okay. And the neurological system is screaming, the sky is falling and we're all going to die. Theology says, I trust life. And my body is saying, control everything at all costs. Theology says, I am enough. And the mental pattern says, please like me. Please approve of me. Please tell me I'm okay. Pay attention. And so many of us are so afraid in the New Thought movement to just own that. There's a whale on the beach, but we're not going to talk about it. I'm going to go into the wilderness, but I'm not going to take anybody with me. I'm saying humility and vulnerability and transparency is going to take all of us to a higher place, to a more beautiful place. Do it. Grab the hand of a friend and come into that dark night and say, let's work on this together. Theology says God is my source, and my nervous system is jumping up and down and saying, you better figure this whole thing out by Thursday or all hell is going to break loose. That's not hypocrisy. It's easy. That's the easy way out. That's not hypocrisy. That's humanity. Anybody here have that experience? Come on, let's get real with each other. We all have that experience. It's not hypocrisy in a New Thought movement to own it. It's human, and we allow ourselves to be human. Ownership is not just planting another idea in our head. It's allowing truth to travel from our head to our heart, from our heart to our nervous system, from our nervous system to our choices, and from our choices to our behaviors until truth becomes embodied. I want you to hear that. Truth is not a pretty Sunday morning bumper sticker, not a pretty marquee, not a fun exercise of kicking a ball around the sanctuary, but it is the embodiment, and that takes hard work. It takes time, and it requires a consistency of environment, a consistency of culture, a consistency of practice, a consistency of purpose. Do it again and again and again, and then you're transforming. The muscle memory is not the same. The body's not responding. Jesus said, let your yes be your yes, and let your no be your no. That was clear teaching. You're going to make mistakes. Get up, have a stronger yes and a stronger no. And so my last question for us all today is, what is the payoff? You know, we don't do anything. Let's read it together. What is the payoff for letting anything run your life except your own soul? Think about that for a second. Next question. What are you getting from the very thing you keep saying you want to be free from? Uh-oh, the minister's meddling now. No, I'm not meddling. I'm just going to own my guts. Sometimes we keep patterns because even when they hurt, they pay dividends. And they're stopping you from becoming more, from being the God essence. Here are a few of the ones that I've dealt with in my life. Anger protected me from my grief. And so I never processed my grief. People-pleasing protected me from rejection. I work so hard to please you so that you don't reject me. Perfectionism protected me from criticism. Control protected me from uncertainty. Anybody got control issues? Staying small protected me from failure. If I play small, I don't have to publicly fail and screw up. Being the victim protected me from having to risk any further. Attempting to be indispensable. It's the thing ministers do. We want to be supermen and superwomen, and we do is protect ourselves from questioning whether I matter or not. Let me do more. Let me be more. Oh, more for you. Then I don't have to worry about whether I matter or not. I don't need your validation. because I'm just doing more. Did somebody say codependent? Spirituality can become very, very codependent. And all that protection, I've dealt with them, still deal with them. Sometimes it comes up and says, I'm still here. Are you sure you're convicted? It kept me from growing. It kept my life from thriving. It kept me from becoming the man, the father, the grandfather, the friend that God was calling me to be. And when I spent enough time in the wilderness, somebody dragged me into the 40 days of wilderness, I realized I was safe enough. I was loved enough. I was powerful enough that I didn't need the payoff anymore. I don't need the payoff anymore. That's the work that we do here. Come on into the wilderness, the water's fine, and let's do it together and recognize we are safe enough, powerful enough, and loving enough that we don't need the payoff anymore. The whale gets back into the water. Ananias Nin said clearly, the time came when the fear of blooming was outweighed by the pain of staying in the bud. That's the work we do here, and it sometimes requires grief. Now, we replace the grief with anger. Sometimes it requires pain. Sometimes it requires us saying, you don't seem to be nice. You're not loving. And we fight, and we push against each other. But the work we do, if those who stay long enough in here and don't make this a Christmas and Easter event, they're the ones whose lives have transformed, whether this community or another, and find your people. Jesus repeatedly, a little music maestro, pointed us towards a very personal, a very intimate encounter with this thing called God. The kingdom of God is near you. If you've jumped ahead on me, that's okay. It is within you, it is among you, and it is at hand. And you may have forgotten, so let me help you remember. There's more of you. Also, in the Bible class this week, we talked about every time somebody was healed, and they said, thank you, Jesus. Thank you. Thank you. I'm so gratified by your healing. And time and time and time again, he said, I didn't do it. Your faith made you whole. That's what gets the whale, not the codependency of let me just let you sit in your victimhood. It's loving you enough to pay it forward and to say, let's get this whale back into the water. What if the spiritual journey isn't about finding somebody who knows more God than you know? Somebody who's more spiritual than you. We're all looking for a guru we talked about last week. But what if awakening to the authority of the presence that is already within you was the work? Having somebody have the guts and courage to stand in the fire in the wilderness and say, there's more within you. The presence is already there. I see you, I feel you, I know you. And so we're going to end as we began our service today with words in that opening song. I put my faith into action and know the good in all I see, the good, the bad, the whale on the beach, the whale in the ocean. I'm powerful. Let's read this together from the beginning. I put my faith into action and know your good in all I see. I'm powerful beyond measure with an awesome God moving through me. Don't let that idea, don't let these ideas be a pretty marquee on Sunday morning between 11:15 and 12:30. Let it be a lived experience in such a way that people will say, I want what you're having. I want a little bit of that. And you're going to say, thank God somebody kicked me in the pants and went to the wilderness with me. That's what I hope for each and every one of you, that you realize the dreams that I've realized, that you realize the life in the heaven on earth that I've been able to manifest with a whole long line of people that stood in the fire with me and made that happen. Claim it, see it, know it, and allow it to be. Let's get busy becoming more. And so it is, and so it shall be.